Hello everyone, this is Dr. Raul Henson. I'm the host of the Medicine of Success podcast, and our guest for tonight is a doctor friend from Singapore. He is a vitreoretina specialist and also an expert on artificial intelligence. And most of us don't even know and don't know what artificial intelligence is. So we're gonna interview my doctor friend Dr. Daniel Ting from Singapore. Dr. Daniel, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Raul. Thanks for having me here.
Yeah, I listened to your lecture a couple of days ago, your webinar, and I was really impressed with your researches and articles on artificial intelligence. And it seems that you're really an expert. And I decided, you know, just thought of it like just text you and interview you on what artificial intelligence is, because me myself, I don't even know the details of that and what it is. That's why you're here. Can you tell us something about yourself, your education, and your journey with artificial intelligence?
Oh yeah, sure. Thanks, Raul, for inviting me to speak in your podcast tonight. And well, basically, I did my, just briefly about myself, I did my MD, PhD in Australia. I then came back to Singapore to start my residency training. And now I am a fourth year out from my residency training. So I completed my fellowship in Morpheus, and I also went to Johns Hopkins University as a Fulbright scholar to pursue the AI and big data domains, in medicine. So my journey with AI really, started as a PhD candidate. So my PhD project that I did back in Australia really was about, assessment, the health technology assessments and innovations in looking at the DR screening technologies, the retina cameras and reading devices. And I also did some basic programming back then. So about 6 years ago, it was a really opportunistic period where there was a PI, the principal investigator in Singapore, who has left back to her country, and I was asked to take over her portfolio, so which is in artificial intelligence. So then the knowledge and experience that I gained from my PhD was quite useful and relevant to the AI portfolio. So then I started, diving deep into AI, machine learning, and deep learning. And before, and in fact, when I took over the portfolio, deep learning was not even around yet. Well, it was around in the technical world, but it wasn't really around in the medical world yet. So back then, the automated, machine learning, the projects was really done based on feature-based learning. So basically, you really have to, circle out all the different lesions in the retina image, and then use that kind of image to train the AI model. As a contrast to deep learning, when you just feed like one single image into the neural net for training. So it has really, taken a big jump from the machine learning, feature-based learning era to deep learning era over the last, last 5 years. Yeah.
So let's discuss first the difference between, is there a difference between artificial intelligence and deep learning?
Yeah, so I mean, AI, artificial intelligence is a very generic term. So in fact, this term was already described back in 1950s. So basically, machine learning term has come about in 1980s, about 30 years later. And so back then, the person who coined the machine learning term is someone called Arthur Samuel. Basically, he really defined the machine learning as the computer having the ability to learn without being directly taught. So basically, the computer should have the ability to do something that they think they should be doing. But of course, you know, as we know, the computing power back then is not as good as compared to now. And in fact, what has made a difference between the machine learning and the deep learning is because of the advent of something what we call the GPU. So, you know, like the computers we are using at home right now is all the CPU-based computer. And when we want to analyze a large amount of images or data within a short period of time, we are using something called GPU, graphic processing unit. It's like a supercomputing. So with GPU, it allows you to process massive amount of data. So the deep learning term, in fact, was first described by someone called Geoffrey Hinton. He's currently one of the Google, the Google research scientist, and that was actually described back in 1980s. But then, without the presence of GPU, the idea of doing deep learning did not fly. So it's only until 10 years ago, really, like 2010. The GPU was invented, and then they re-explored the idea of using deep learning with GPU, and that's how the whole technical and the medical field, the R&D space actually got sparked off. So yeah, so I mean that has really taken a lot of years before deep learning has achieved a very spectacular performance in many different fields.
So when you say deep learning, it's a offshoot of artificial intelligence.
So deep learning is a subset of the machine learning technique. So deep learning is a technique that's been described by Geoffrey Hinton, as mentioned before. But also Geoffrey Hinton has two other students, one called Yan LeCun and the other one is Yosha Banjo. So one is currently the Facebook AI director. Yan LeCun is the name, and then whereas Yosha Banjo is currently in Google. So the three of them has actually jointly published a paper in Nature back in 2014. They described that deep learning allows the data, the image, to be analyzed by multiple processing layers. So basically, if you look at there's something what we call convolutional neural net. In short term, it's called CNN. So within a CNN, if you can look at the CNN as a human brains, like a neurons in the brains, there's a millions of neurons within the convolutional neural net. So if you look at CNN, broadly, people are describing CNN in different layers. So the CNN has started from 7 layers since 30 years ago, all the way to about 1,000 layers as of now. So I mean, over the last 30 years, the development of CNN has progressively improved, and the features within the CNN, I won't go into details, but basically, the first layer will be talking to the second layer, and so forth. So basically, after the first layer to the say if you have a VGG net, the VGG net has 16 layers. So if you go from layer 1 to 16, so literally the machine will already come up with some ideas what this image is about. So what the powerful thing about deep learning as compared to machine learning, which is the old form of, which is a form that you needed a feature-based learning, is that Now we no longer need to annotate the image. So for instance, I just give you an example. Previously, if you were to train an AI model using a feature-based learning, for instance, diabetic retinopathy, we literally have to circle out all the different microaneurysms, heart exudates in the retina image before we send it into training. But right now with deep learning, what we need to do is just to feed the neural nets with the image, and then you tell the image whether this is mild MPDR, moderate MPDR, or so and so forth. So you actually, instead of having to annotate every single lesion in the image, what you need to tell the machine is that this is an image with a certain diagnosis. So how do they come up with the algorithm output? People always say this is a black box, because they don't actually know what happened within the neural nets. And somehow, somewhat, this performance has really shocked many fields, you know, since 5 years ago. So that is the main difference between the old feature-based learning method versus the deep learning, where you no longer need any annotation prior to the training. So that's the main difference between the two.
Okay. So when you say CNN, that's like the brain.
Yes,
of the of the computer, of the artificial intelligence.
Yeah.
And then when you mention for the listeners, diabetic retinopathy is a disease in the eye inside, or called the retina, wherein if your diabetes is uncontrolled, and then we will see, as ophthalmologists, some changes in the retina, and we will know if you have diabetes or not. And according to Dr. Daniel, the deep learning, we will know if the patient has diabetes or no diabetes inside the eye without a doctor or an eye doctor looking inside the eye, right?
That's correct. So if you actually take the image and you run the AI the algorithm, so essentially it will tell you whether this patient has diabetic eye diseases or not.
I see. Now, before we go to ophthalmology and dive into it, what are the other applications of deep learning or artificial intelligence in medicine in general?
Right. So in general, the first paper that was described using deep learning was, the diabetic retinopathy that we spoke about. But since then, there's people describing using deep learning to detect skin cancer, to differentiate between, the malignant type skin cancer versus the benign ones, which the bad one versus the good ones. The second one would be, using deep learning to detect whether, your cancer cells have spread to the lymph nodes. So basically, how they usually need to examine the pathology slides under the microscope. So usually you need like an expert that has been trained for the last 15 years to get a pathology, the specialist qualification. But literally using the deep learning, you could actually instantaneously differentiate between, whether there's a presence of the cancer cell that has spread to your lymphatic system. So that's the second application. The third one is, I'm not sure whether people are using, a lot of the Apple Watch, so basically using the Apple Watch, they now can use the pulse rate that has been detected using deep learning to know whether this patient has any irregular heart problems or not. So those are some of the big examples outside ophthalmology that has been, that has been described over the last 2 years using the deep learning technique.
I see. So this kind of technology is basically new. Even in the Apple iWatch, which I have, and even they could detect if there are irregular heartbeats without even the expertise of a doctor. So basically, we are talking about the future is here right now, and the future is ongoing, and we have to be thankful that we have this. And remember, I asked you if we can do this remotely. Like, for example, there's a AI or deep learning portable retinal camera that can take pictures in the remote provinces, and then instead of a doctor, it can already recognize if you have a retina problem like diabetic retinopathy. I think that's the future, right?
That's correct. I totally agree. If we could, now you know how the technology in the healthcare space has gone from the mobile, the very big size machine, to like portable, like how we go from desktop to laptop to like smartphones. So I think a lot of the health technology are following the same path, where 10, 15 years ago, you will have a very huge retina cameras, you know, located inside your imaging room to try to take some photos. But now you literally are carrying, you know, all these like foldable or portable the cameras around to take photos. So I think slowly, progressively, we are even going to move into smartphone, tablets and stuff. Of course, the optics, the optical engineering, specifically to ophthalmology, is not there yet. But there's a lot of the research work is currently underway to march towards the direction.
So, Dr. Ting, how about the future direction of AI? Where is it going towards now?
So, as you know, a lot of the AI has been described in many major impact factor papers. So now, I think the next 5 years in my mind is to see how we could clinically translate the technologies. The last 2 years, if I would describe in a clinical trials, like a drugs kind of, you know, it's kind of like a phase 1, phase 2, where you really go from the bench trying to come into clinical space. And now we need more like a phase 3 trials, you know, to do randomized control trials and stuff, which is very lacking currently in the AI studies in medicine. So that's number one. So we need more clinical translation, clinical implementations in the real world setting. The second thing is, how do we then govern the safety, the medical legal issues, the data privacies, the AI ethics? You know, these are some of the big topics that we are currently talking about. And in fact, there will, you know, if you talk to different AI experts, they will have different point of view. Sometimes they can have a very extreme views about how we should handle, you know, the data privacy, the medical insurance, and that kind of thing. So that is the second big part. The third part is, how do we then educate the next generation to be more digitally savvy or AI savvy in view of all I call this as a tsunami of, you know, the deep learning technology is flooding into the healthcare space. So do we, so now we have actually founded the AAO AI Task Force last year, you know, so I was one of the founding members. And some of the topics that we are talking about is whether we should even come up with new books in the, you know, the AAO, you know, the book series that all the residents are reading, to come up with AI and big data books to really educate, you know, the next generations of residents about all these, you know, related topics. And so these are some of the things. And then the last part will be, how do we then, I spoke briefly about the black box issues in the AI, the training. So now the computer scientists are trying to see how to unravel the black box, because in this is especially important in healthcare, because the doctors, if you were to convince them to use your technology, they really need to know what your AI system is thinking. So today you say your AI system say, oh, this is no disease, this is yes disease. Then we need to know why the AI system is saying, oh yeah, why do you think this patient has a problem, right? And if you can't give the physician an answer or like a rationale how the decision is being made, I this would be a major barrier, you know, for the clinicians to actually adopt such technology. Same thing for patients. So you say, oh, my AI system say you have a problem in your eye, then of course you need to say, oh, the patients are, oh, which part and why is it so? Then you need to actually show some of the, you know, the AI diagnosis to your patient to convince them that their eyes in fact has a problem. So these are some of the big areas that is currently underway that we are looking into. Yeah.
So basically, this AI or deep learning is more of decision making from the computers. Do I get it right?
Right. So this is one of the big roles. The other one is now the other part is we're also trying to see whether we could use it for predictive or prognostication. You know, say if you have a baseline image, the data, you know, and then whether you could predict like say for instance, like, you know, patients with age-related macular degeneration, they need lots of you know, the injections into the eye. So whether we could use some sort of AI predictive model to prognosticate how many injections does one patient needs for the next 12 months, or, you know, what type of injections does he or she needs? Yeah, that kind of stuff. So, you know, so the diagnostic is one big part, and then the predictive is another big part. Yeah.
So this is a win-win situation for the doctor and the patient. The computer will help us easier and faster, even without the doctor. And then probably the doctor will just be there to confirm and make sure the diagnosis is right, since it's still a patient, still a human being. But the most important thing here is that the AI technology will make it faster. And at the same time, if there's a lot of patients here, it can decide for itself which one needs treatment or not. Is that right, Dr. Ting?
Yeah, that's correct. So yeah, so you actually touched upon a very important question that I always get asked. They always ask, is AI going to replace the physicians? You know, so that kind of question you always get asked in many conferences. So like you pointed out, AI indeed would actually expedite a lot of the decision making that the physicians can do. And in fact, sometimes they can even highlight some of the potential the abnormal areas that the physician can miss. So, you know, like in a clinic, sometimes in a very busy day, one clinic sessions over 3 hours, you have to see 40 to 50 patients. And some of, you know, some of the things you tend to miss if you rush, you know, if you, you know, especially if you see patients in a very rush hours. But having said that, the AI, if you have your AI tool next to you, that would actually allow you to minimize some of the potential errors that are being made by human. And I totally agree with physicians being the final step before the information get relayed to a patient. So basically, AI to me is a very complementary and very synergistic diagnostic tool or predictive tool to the physicians. So instead of replacing us, I think they will make us a better physician.
Okay, like right now, just to give you an idea, just one case, like for example, a patient comes to my clinic, I have an OCT or what you call an imaging that takes a picture inside the retina. Yeah. And then somehow I'm busy, right? Like I have like maybe 10 patients for imaging of the retina. And since I'm so busy, I didn't have time to look at it, and I will only be able to look at it maybe after during the day, and then, you know, make and call the patients, and then explain it to him again the next day or a week after. But if you have AI, it will already decide for itself. Okay, you have to talk to this patient. This patient has diabetic retinopathy. That patient, you can follow up in 6 months. This patient needs whatever treatment. So you think that in the future it will become like that?
Yeah, in fact, like the exactly like what you have mentioned, Google, DeepMind, and Morpheus has published a paper in Nature Medicine looking at how you could use OCTs to triage the referral urgency. That is specifically designed for the primary eye care providers, where they actually classify the urgency of referrals to 4 different categories, whether the patient needs to be seen on the same day or within a week, within a month or longer. So literally, that concept has been well described, you know, in their paper itself. And like what you just said, that is a totally good environment to apply such AI algorithm to really triage the type of patients that you really have to spend a little bit more time before discharging them from a hospital, or the patients who can actually be safely sent home straight after their imaging test. So that is already here, but it's just that they are currently trying to clinically translate or integrate that into the clinical workflow.
Daniel, can you expound on, during your lecture, I've heard you talk about the accuracy of AI taking a picture of the retina, and because of AI, the AI knew what's the age and the sex of that patient. Can you kindly explain that?
Right. Yeah. So okay. So just talking about that, I can actually share a very short story about that happened about 2 years ago. So when we were asked to review the paper, and we were like, oh no, is that even true? That can't be true, right? How do you use a retina image to predict someone's age or gender? And then, in the same paper, they also describe a lot of different vascular risk factors like high blood pressure and stuff. So when we actually look into the paper, the methodology wise, they actually use quite a standard way to train the AI model, literally using big data. So this paper has been published by the Google Google AI group from San Francisco Palo Alto. So basically, they are using the UK Biobank data sets with two different external independent test set to do it. So literally, UK Biobank data sets, for those of you who don't know, is like a very large UK-based population, the data sets where they collect the patients, the age, the gender, the general well-being, the systemic information, as well as they take the retina image as well. So using that patient's demographics, the paper itself, from memory, they had about, I think, 100,000+ images to train. So using this big data, the machine can actually do pattern recognition in terms of, classifying the different features based on the age, the gender and stuff. So in the paper itself, the gender prediction is as high as 97%. The age prediction is within like two standard deviation. We say, oh, how can this be true? So we actually tested it in our Singapore data sets. And in fact, the gender prediction that we managed to run is even higher than what they reported. So we actually managed to get 98%. So these are some of the features that the machine is learning without the human knowing. And in fact, if you ask the general audience in the top retina conference, you ask the top professor in retina and ask them, you've been seeing the patient's retina for the last 50 years in your practice. Do you know any features in your retina that can differentiate a male from a female? I'm pretty sure none of them can actually tell you convincingly what they think is the male versus the female. But computer today has actually take the science into the next level and unravel a lot of the unknown, the discoveries that the human brain doesn't know for the last, 1,000 years. So I think this is a very exciting period. But again, what are they seeing? What are they learning? This is the part, the black box part that we are still trying really hard to actually look into right now.
This is very exciting times. As you know, we are lucky in ophthalmology because we are like the first specialty to get this AI technology. And we are lucky that Dr. Ting from Singapore also is like an expert now, and he can share in the future their expertise and their researches on artificial intelligence and deep learning. Well, that was a very good and concise explanation of artificial intelligence and deep learning, Dr. Daniel. Now, this is gonna be the last part of our interview. And the title of my podcast is The Medicine of Success. And I could see that in your journey, you're still young, but what's your secret to success? How would you define success in your personal or professional life?
I think my personally speaking, success to me, it really means the ability to do something that you're really passionate about, something that you always feel happy doing it. And I also believe that success should be measured, through the impact that you imposing on the other's life. So it's not so much about yourself, but of course, like you have to be happy to be doing that. But then to me, I feel happier to see, the things that you're doing is benefiting the others. Same thing professionally. We as the doctors, I mean, what we wanted to do in the daily life, whether you do technology based research or animal science or, the clinical work, what you want to do is to really benefit your patients. It can be in a very big way, all the big discoveries, Nobel Prize winners, but also like the very small thing, like just treating a patient's cataracts, or even just spending some time to listen to your patients in the clinic. I think that to me, so long as that your patients are satisfied or they get something what they want and they think they have benefited from your consultations, I think that it means to me, it means a success. It's already considered a success to me. Yeah.
Perfectly said, Dr. Daniel. And since you're a vitreoretinal specialist in Singapore, based there, maybe you could tell the listeners if some people or some patients want to have consultation with you or want to know more about artificial intelligence, can you give them your clinic schedule or your email?
Yeah, so I am, so if you actually look into the Singapore National Eye Center website, so my name is there. So Daniel Ting is my name. And for those who want to reach out, you could actually connect with me through LinkedIn. I'm on LinkedIn. You just type in Daniel Ting. You can actually easily find me. Then my email address. So my email address is daniel.ting45@gmail.com. Currently, I'm looking for also clinical and technical research fellows in my lab. So for those of you who are interested, please link up. So I'll be happy to speak more. And once the COVID situation has settled down, please do come by or swing by, if you're interested with the AI symposiums, and then we can definitely have a chat after the talk as well.
Wow, what an interview. I learned so many things, Dr. Daniel, and I hopefully in the near future, maybe in 6 months to a year, maybe we can guest you again and speak about your future work and your accomplishments. Thank you, Dr. Ting, Dr. Daniel.
Thanks for having me. And I hope you guys enjoy what we have discussed just now, and look forward to seeing every one of you.
Thank you, Dr. Ting. And so that's our show for today, the Medicine of Success podcasts. Keep safe, stay safe, and God bless.